Welcome to the pre-Thanksgiving completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, November 24th, Ian, 2020. Yeah, that's Ian.
It's me.
He's ready for stuffing.
I'm ready. I'm not making stuffing this year.
I'm Pat Contry. I'm ready for butternut squash or candied yams.
Nice.
On the show today, we'll be talking about lots of cool stuff. We're talking about the latest crazy Heritage Auctions sealed video game results. Oh my god, I don't have my buttons in front of me. We're talking about Internet Archive for Flash games and animation. Super Mario World 30th anniversary is here. Couple of Q&A and a scumbag side of the week. Ian, what's been going on? How's your weekend while I get this?
Oh boy, I thought you were just gonna leave those buttons off to the side for an episode. That would have been nice. Remember that when the holidays roll around later this month. My weekend, it was dandy. I worked. We had our buddies up north were down in San Diego again doing some arcade stuff pickup. So we grabbed some takeout and had a beer over at our place. It was a good time. Good to see people. It's not something I do very often. Every social interaction these days feels like water in a desert. It's fantastic. But yeah, other than that, I went cleaned yesterday and then started going shopping for Thanksgiving stuff so that I can start prepping food tonight, probably.
Oh!
Start doing minor prep tonight and a little bit of prep tomorrow so that Thursday goes super smooth because I have to make a lot of food. We're not having family over. It's just going to be Vonnie, myself, and our one friend who lives down the street. But Vonnie is going to drop off food for her brother and her parents afterwards, and then her uncle is in like an assisted living home up here, so she's going to take him some, and like the unit he lives in is like four people, so we're going to take food for them.
Oh, that's nice. As well. That's very nice.
So it'll be cool because people who want a meal will get one, and I like to cook for a lot of people and can't really do that this year, so that's kind of how we're making it work. I'm going to make the same Thanksgiving Day portion size, and we're just going to
throw it out to the masses.
Yeah, throw it in.
Feed the world, Ian.
Throw it in to-go containers and get it out there.
Feed the world.
Feed the world.
I cooked this weekend as much as I wanted to, I guess. I made, for the first time, scallops and pasta. Really nice olive oil lemon sauce. Oh, my God. It was better than I thought. I did myself. I was like, okay, we'll see how this turns out. I'm like, no, this is good. I want to make this every other week. This week, I'm going to do it with shrimp, make like a whole seafood pasta thing.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Extra Napkins. I'm your host, Ian Ferguson, and this is your co-host, Jonathan Splett. No, this does happen sometimes on the other podcast, too.
Yes.
We cross over.
Oh, yeah, we're allowed to talk. I think we talked about food before. But food is life, Ian. This whole year I've been cooking more for myself.
I know.
More than usual.
It's been good.
And the chili, it's been good for me. It's been good. And I like to do it. But what else did I do this weekend? I watched Animaniacs.
I did not. I meant to, and I just didn't. But how was it?
It was good.
Yeah.
I was never like a huge hardcore Animaniacs fan, but same. I always used to watch it because it was very clever versus the other cartoons in the 90s. Like the Fox cartoons were always a notch above. I loved the Tick. Tick was fantastic, the Tick cartoon, and that was on for a couple of years. And then the X-Men cartoon was great. And Animaniacs was good. It was like the proper successor to the original Warner Brothers cartoons, and so had that same sort of quality, kind of zany quality, a little subversive, you know, a little referential and pop culture stuff like the original Looney Tunes were back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. So I watched it. I'm much more of a Pinky and the Brain fan. I always thought Pinky and the Brain was the crown jewel of I mean, not just me, but he spun off into his own show, but Pinky the Brain was brilliant. That was, to me, always the most consistently good thing. And in this, it was still the most consistently good thing, Pinky the Brain. So the way this was set up, this animatic series, is they cut all the secondary cast, and, you know, like Buttons and Mindy and the Good Feathers and Rita and Runt and all those. They cut all of those except for Pinky and the Brain. So almost every episode, with the exception, I think, of one, was would be an Animaniacs short, then Pinky and the Brain, and then an Animaniacs short, and then you're out. Each episode was between like 20 and 25 minutes, something like that. And very funny, very sharp. The voice acting obviously is going to be different because they haven't done the voices in over 20 years. There were some people that were complaining that it was too meta this time out and that there was too much leaning into things. There was probably one sketch I would have cut that leaned heavily on, like, it was like a Russia communist throwback sort of thing where they're doing an Animaniacs ripoff in Russia, like it was like the 90s. And I'm like, yeah, I know with the Russian election meddling, that stuff, they did that, but it was like they did a little bit too much. But otherwise, everything was mostly on point. And I went back and watched the original Animaniacs a few episodes just to compare, because I did watch a little bit of the first run when it came out, the first few episodes, and some of it is not as good as probably what people remember. It's okay, but, I mean, the original Animaniacs characters, they're bratty kids that just fuck with people. That's what they are. Yakko, Wakko, and Dot. And it gets old. And so in this, I think there's a better balance on these clips where it's like there's ones like that old school where they fuck with people, like the classic, like Looney Tunes, how, you know, Bugs would fuck with someone, or so they still have those, but then they have other ones that are more meta as well. So there was a good, there, I think there's a better balance of it. And in terms of the other side characters that people miss, like a lot of people miss Slappy Squirrel. I never was a huge fan of Slappy Squirrel, but a lot of people like Slappy Squirrel. They might bring those characters, I think, back for the second season, they said, if the show was successful enough for. So, no, but yeah, I would definitely check it out. The Pinky the Brain, though, is still, I mean, God, they didn't skip a beat, in my opinion. I mean, there's a fucking, spoilers, I'm going to spoil this, so it's like, sorry. I mean, God, one of the first Pinky the Brain episodes is that the Brain gets hit on his head, forgets the conversation he had telling Pinky what his plan was to take over the world. So then they remember, well, the NSA records every conversation. Let's have Edward Snowden help us break into the NSA. I mean, it's just funny shit like that. It's great. And the animation is fantastic. It sounds like it was mostly, or for the most part, as close as what you can do to hand animation in 2020. At least hand animated, like, on a computer, probably. Like, it looks gorgeous, the animation.
Nice. That's fantastic. I was also never a massive Pinky or Animaniacs fan. I don't know. It's one of those ones. I have no negative thoughts about it. I've watched episodes. I enjoyed it. I think it was just, I think it just came out at a point where maybe I was just like a year or two beyond tuning into it every day or something. I was probably going out and hanging out with friends after school and stuff like that, as opposed to when I was younger, I'd, you know, run home and flip on the TV and watch whatever cartoons it would have been at that point in time. It would have been, you know, Tiny Toons or whatever.
I don't know if it started a Saturday. I remember watching it Saturday morning. I don't know if that then transitioned to weekdays eventually. There were 99 episodes total over 6 years.
Could have been like in syndication. I don't know when the actual air dates for those episodes were, but I always remember them being on after school. And I think that's why I missed a lot of it. But I did enjoy it, and I actually kind of think the Genesis game is pretty decent. I'm happy to see these cartoons come back. I think there is still room in modern times for that kind of animation and that kind of show, the current event, the show that, you know, that riffs smartly on current events.
Yeah, that, for a it's not a reboot, for a sequel series, it makes more sense than a lot of these other shows. It makes sense,
sure,
to do it.
Those characters were meant to be able to slip into any situation and then talk about it.
Yeah,
so I will definitely give it a shot. I will probably watch it sometime this week. I was thinking about watching it yesterday. I didn't. I honestly will probably throw it on tonight when I'm doing some light prep work for Thanksgiving dinner.
You can talk about an extra napkins. You can do a crossover there.
Yeah,
there you
exactly.
go. We can cross them over.
Crossing the streams.
Real quick, this is from Nintendo. We have a couple of Nintendo things in the intro. Nintendo has new guidelines for Animal Crossing where they want to keep politics out of their game after the Democrats and the Biden-Harris campaign used it and had their own island and used it to advertise, which is a brilliant idea to do that. I mean, Animal Crossing is like the most popular game of the year, right? I mean, is there anything that's even close to that for this year?
I think people will find a way to not make it game of the year, even though it clearly was the way it took over. It's not my favorite Animal Crossing by far, but I mean, Animal Crossing has never been as popular as it is right now.
No.
My friend John, who I do the extra napkins with, his girlfriend doesn't play video games at all, and she is obsessed with Animal Crossing. It's one of those things, I think a lot of people picked it up, and I did think a lot of people would drop it as time went on. But for the people who have never really experienced it before, there's still so much fresh and new to do. They don't really understand. So a lot more people are still playing it than I thought. I was afraid it might be a fad, but no, it seems like it's carrying on through the end of the year, at least.
It was just a perfect storm. I mean, it was the first big game to come out during lockdown. So it was like, okay, right. Well, and it's a good game because you're interacting. So it was like perfect. So they announced a new set of guidelines to help businesses and organizations play within the rules. The new guidelines allow businesses and organizations to provide custom designs and dream addresses to other players, invite other players to their island, and upload screenshots and game footage to family-friendly websites and social network services. However, they advise users to refrain from bringing politics into the game and prohibit the use of Animal Crossing as a marketing platform that directs people to activities or campaigns outside the game. So it's like, yeah, because Animal Crossing is his own little social media in a way, right? So they're trying to set their boundaries there. I just think it's interesting. They waited until after the campaign season to do it.
I think they saw it, and I don't think they wanted to come out as necessarily seeming pro or anti someone or something. But sure. I think there is some intelligence to the decision in the broader, and they say it there, eliminating the marketing aspect of it. So it's not just politics. They don't want people doing advertising campaigns within Animal Crossing, something that you're not likely to see unless you go out of your way to see it. But they want to nip that in the bud.
I mean, can you click on something that'll bring it to a website in Animal Crossing? No, right?
No.
So I guess you can quilt something with like a URL on it, I guess, or like a slogan, or, you know, do something cute like that, or like you can take a picture of something.
You might be able to do like CV codes.
Like a QR code?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. You might be able to do QR codes. I'm not certain.
Take a picture of a QR code, put it on an object.
Yeah, you can use them to bring things into the game. I don't know if you can actually put a QR code on something.
Oh, there you go. So Pat can't do his ultimate Nintendo book stand in the game.
Yeah, they would probably frown upon that.
You want to talk about this Outrun Arcade 1-Up or not really?
Not really. I don't like the look of it at all.
Because I guess you can order it, and it's like a mini little Outrun, and then you can get a stand for it to play it stand-up, or you can get the little seat thing, which was the same thing they did for the Star Wars Arcade, which I can't stand how those seats look. I mean, I can't tell you
they
how
don't
much
look good.
I hate those. There's no upper back thing on them. They're just a piece of plastic or whatever particle board, and there's no style to those at all, like none.
No, there isn't. I'm still a fan of the Arcade 1-Up NBA Jam cabinet. I think that one actually serves a pretty decent purpose. I don't think some of the other ones necessarily do, but this one in particular, the sit down stuff. I don't know. It just looks cheap. If you were going to make it a sit-down one, why not try to at least make it look like a car? Put some sideboards on it. Try to make it look something like it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't look any better than, honestly, just flipping over a laundry basket and sitting on it.
Well, plus, these mini ones, when you're doing a sit-down, it's like you're a toddler.
Right.
Because you're at, what, three-quarter size to begin with. So you have a smaller wheel, a smaller shifter, smaller pedals. So it's already awkward, but now you're sitting on a thing. It's like you're playing a little kid's little quarter thing. We're on the rocket ship going back. Like, that's how it appears to me.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully, hopefully the quality on the pedals is nice and the wheel. You know, it's hard to screw up that stuff. The shifter. You get the four games. You get Outrunners, which is a fantastic game, which I almost never saw in the arcades back in the day, which was great. Yeah, that's all. I mean, check it out. I mean, if you love Outrun, it's the way to get it because those machines are expensive. To find an Outrun machine, a stand-up or a sit-down one, or go for a ton of money at this point. There was a canceled Green Lantern game. as we run through this. I mean, at this point, there's like game preservation news almost every week, so it's like it's hard to justify talking about these for a long time on the podcast. So there's a video out there. So this was going to be an ocean game, a Green Lantern. They worked on it a little bit, and then they canned it because at that point in time, the Super Nintendo was getting long in the tooth, and it didn't make any sense to spend the extra money and R&D time to put out a Green Lantern game by that point, by the mid-90s. I don't remember the Green Lantern being that popular.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't remember the Green Lantern being popular at all, not in the 90s. I know he has his fans, but I'm just saying, popular enough to reach that threshold that would then
warrant
require you to have a video game? Yeah, I don't see it. It has a fake European label on it, looks like, and if it was Ocean, that would make sense. They did some licensed properties. We got some of those in the U.S., but they were a particularly big licensed property developer in Europe. The game looks nice, probably would not play nice. Most of the Ocean stuff plays kind of like garbage. It does look nice, but I can't imagine it doing particularly well if it had come out.
So they were also working on the Lobo fighting game, and that never came out as well, and according to there was a video about it. That sort of tanked their relationship with DC at that point on their properties. Probably for the best, because that Lobo game would have been trash as well, probably. It probably wouldn't have been that good.
I know
comics was hit its zenith in the mid-90s in terms of, like, that's the thing. Like,
they did.
Think about today, it's like, well, a Lobo game, it would have been possible then because of the comic book bubble. And Lobo was a popular character. He was, he was like the Wolverine on the DC side, but he's a villain. And he would go after Superman, and there was DC versus Marvel. That shit came out around 94-ish. And, the death of Superman was 93. So it was popular. Like, there was a lot of mainstream comic book storylines that people knew about more so than today. Like, that'll never happen again. That sort of that bubble likely. But I guess that's why they're coming out. We're thinking about a lot of these properties. I mean, hell, you had the fucking Exo Manowar game. And what was that on the Saturn? Was that on the Saturn?
There's an Exo Manowar on. I thought there was a Super. No. Was there a Super Nintendo one? No, there's a Game Boy one. I know that for sure.
So that's what I mean. An Exo Manowar is a Valiant fucking property.
Yeah.
For God's sake. Oh, it was the Iron Man crossover Exo Manowar.
It's Iron Man Exo Manowar. It's the crossover.
Ricola. Yeah, so the fact of the matter is you have these weird esoteric properties getting games that you'll never see again. I can't imagine Exo Manowar selling well on the Sega Saturn. I just can't, even with Iron Man attached to it. It's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
I mean, most people out there wouldn't never know what Exo Manowar was, besides being the Iron Man of Valiant Comics. It's basically what it is. I'm surprised Marvel would have teamed up to do that. I'm surprised they would have been on board for that. I guess they were in trouble by then.
Right.
In terms of money, I guess, by like 96 or so. Anyway, so what else we got going on, Ian? We got enamel pins.
We do.
Got goods. We got holiday gifts at ultimatenintendo.com. RBI baseball stickers, guidebooks, T-shirts. You can order right now, or you can follow me on Twitter at PathyNESPunk. I might have a Black Friday code to save a little bit of money. But if you want to get in the rush, you can not wait for that. But I'll do a percentage off for Black Friday. I don't wait for Cyber Monday. I'm wild. I'm wacky. Well, this year there's not going to be. I think everyone's basically doing a Cyber Monday, or everyone's doing the online deals, not just the Friday rush this year. I believe it'd be weird to say, hey, everyone rush into our store just for Friday to do that. Man, that's the one positive this year. We have a regular Black Friday where it's not like, people rushing in after they have their turkey stuffed in their mouth on Thursday night.
Yeah. People asked us if we were doing anything for Black Friday, and I don't think we are. Or if we are, we're going to announce very few things day of. We don't want people crushing the store on Friday.
Yeah, we're going to do a responsible one this year, everyone, probably because of the pandemic. So that's good.
Yep, I hope so. We can only have 6 people in the store at a time, and that fills up quick because everyone feels like it's time to go shopping with the whole family. It drives me insane.
Can we stop shopping with the whole family? Can we get past that? It's not 1960s anymore.
I'm fucking 50s. tired these days of watching mom and dad come in with two kids and grandma, and only one person wants something. And
grandma comes into the game store?
Yeah, it happens all the time. The whole family comes in. Or, like, friends will come in with, like, four of their friends, and those friends have no interest in being in the store while the other person browses. And it's like, I know that everyone just wants to pretend like it's going to go away, but we're in a pandemic. When you go out to get something, especially something non-essential, like a video game at a store, go by yourself and please have a rough idea in your head of what you're getting. Like, yeah, take a minute, browse, but if you see it's getting packed, be like, all right, time to wrap up here. We're not back in normal times. We're not back in, you know, please come and leisurely browse for 2 hours and you know, and chat with me about everything. We're open. We want your business. But come in, get what you need, and leave. It's common courtesy right now.
Yeah, it's people's minds haven't adjusted, which is insane that they haven't. I don't know if it's a denial thing. I mean, my friend Tommy has family in Louisiana who are, they kind of go part and parcel. Trump supporter / COVID denier. It's kind of hard to be one and not the other, it seems. Like, it's a package deal. So his aunt is basically on life support right now. Said, oh, this isn't a big deal. She got it. The family never wore masks, had a stroke, is on life support now. Tommy's parents are like, starting to take it seriously now. Like, now it finally hit home. Like, oh, yeah, you know, your aunt's dying, basically. And it's like, sometimes it takes that, because we're the most stubborn fucking species. It's especially in this country. That's all I can say.
All right. Well, whatever. Let's move on to something different. Google Stadia is going to be the first place to get Pac-Man Mega Tunnel Battle. So it is a Stadia first game, which means that it will come out to other platforms eventually. We don't know when. We've said what we've said about Stadia, and I'm not big on it. This game does look amusing to me. It looks like a mixture of Pac-Man Battle Royale, the arcade game that everyone loves to play, and battle royale game, like a Fortnite one, basically a last man standing. So it looks like it's 64 pack men at a time, and as you pack people and pack persons, and as you progress through the level and beat the other players, it looks like it shrinks down and you basically enter more mazes with the other surviving players.
When you win your particular quadrant, what is there, 5, 10, 15, there's 20, was it 25 stages at a time? What is it? Let's see. Or is there more than that? Is it 4 times 16? Something like that? 5, 10, 15, 20. Whatever it is. There's 64 competitors, and then it breaks down, and then you eventually go into, I guess, the single one, which would make sense here. It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a very cool idea. It looks like
there's a holiday themed little Christmas tree one, so you can dress up your character.
There's different maze layouts, and I absolutely am certain that there will be lots and lots of cosmetics to a purchase or win. To dress up your character. That's always a big thing in any of these battle royale games, whether it's Fortnite or Fall Guys. Dressing up the character with weird costumes is how they get you to keep playing. It's your signs of progress.
What a great game that I wish was on the Switch so I could play it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's a Stadia exclusive right now, at least.
Yeah, like I said, it's what they call first on Stadia, which means it's a timed exclusive. It's not going to be exclusive to Stadia forever. Another game that I really want to play is Gunsport. My buddy made that one. I think we talked about it briefly. That is currently a Stadia exclusive, but I really want that to come to other platforms. I play tested that ages ago, yeah. And it was super fun.
I would think that these developers, Bandai Namco, smart enough to know that, hey, yeah, we would be, even if we got a little bit of money to be a time exclusive or exclusive, we're shooting ourselves in the foot not putting this on the other consoles. We just are.
Yeah,
we, no. We'll sell 1,000 times the amounts on Switch and even on, you know, even on the PlayStation and Xbox. But on the Switch, this is obviously a natural game. Handheld mode as well. You know, Super Mario 35 is blowing up, and I'm itching to get back in there. I haven't played it in a few weeks now, almost, and want to keep my Joe-mentum going on that title for sure. But yeah, check out. You can try the demo for free, and you can get the free Stadia if you want to just try it out. And then if it comes out elsewhere, you know you can wait. You know, Nintendo. This is an unfortunate situation that they shut down the big house. Smash Melee tournament. This made the rounds, what, yesterday or a couple days ago?
A few days ago.
The Big House Melee tournament's been around for years. One of the biggest ones, I believe, in the Midwest. There's this Slippy mod I believe we spoke about in the podcast. It was a netcode rollback mod for Smash Brothers Melee.
So I don't say anything stupid about it. What it is basically you can take your Melee ISO, drop it onto a computer, and Slippy allows you to play online, which you couldn't do in the first place.
Sure.
And it uses, from what I understand, very good netcode. I'm not sure if it uses rollback. I guess it probably uses rollback.
Yeah, it would have to be. That would be the best one to do that.
So so that's what it does. And problematically, Nintendo does not like that.
Yeah, it sucks. Now, you would say, you know, why did Nintendo do this? It's a hack of their software. First off, they're not going to allow a public event to happen with this. In your wildest dreams, this would not happen. The only thing I thought about to myself, would they have allowed some sort of like legal exemption for this and said, okay, we're going to allow you the legal exemption to do this? Their lawyers probably said that'd be a Pandora's box, because now if you allow this, it's going to encourage others to do this with your software, with other software, and create their own things, and that would just become a mess. So I see that. I don't know what sort of compromise could have happened to allow this to exist in a public forum. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a similar situation where this has happened, where a competitive game, they hacked it to do something it's not supposed to do, plus using ISOs on top. So it's also the piracy aspect on top of it, where you're technically pirating it at the same time. So it's a double whammy.
I saw a lot of people being like, I can back up. The legal thing behind backups has always been... Look, I'm hugely in favor of emulation. I'm just speaking from a legal standpoint. Having backups of games you own, I don't think actually has any standing.
The legal basis for backups is literally I create a backup in case my original copy fails. That's what that backup law basically is.
Right, not creating copy of what I already own that I can use in a different way.
That I can play elsewhere or I can emulate. That's not what the law says. I mean, maybe if it changes in time and use in court, but that's not what that is. It's literally, I have a backup that I put in the side just in case my fucking dirty ass VHS fucks up, or like that's what it's for. That's what it is. You can disagree with it in theory, but that's the law. So, you know, Nintendo, according to this, they reached out before they sent a cease and desist. But before that, they reached out to the person running the event saying, "Hey, can you not do this? Because we have to let people know you're doing this, and then it's going to probably come to that." And they said, no, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to go forward. And so they got C indeed. And it's not a shock. I mean, at this point in time, you'd be shocked if Nintendo allowed this to happen. But, you know, it's sort of those, that sort of the is what it is situations. And I saw people overreacting, saying, oh, this is going to kill the Smash Brothers scene with Melee. And it's like, okay.
It's not.
We're in a pandemic. We didn't have a March Madness tournament. They lost billions of dollars. They moved back the Olympics an entire fucking year. Japan did. Like, and tons of lost money. We're going to get through this. It'll come back. This sucks. We're going to have in-person stuff again once we get the vaccine. Summer next year, we're probably going to start to be a little bit normal again. Knock on wood with all the estimates. We just gotta hold the line here.
Yeah, I'm not here to tone police or tell people that they shouldn't feel a certain way about it.
Yeah, you can be upset.
Be upset, and I get it. Like, it seems like they're doing a huge jerk move. I realize that without you know, these social gatherings. This is something that, hey, everyone looked at it and they were like, this is going to fix the problem. We're going to be able to do this this year. I realize there's a lot of excitement behind it. And I realize having the few things that we have to look forward to right now getting taken from you sucks. And that hurts. But I did see, and like I said, I'm not trying to tell police, but to the people who I think were really feeling it, I don't want to necessarily say overreacting, but, you know, that's how it would have come off to me. I understand, but like Pat said, it's... give it time.
Everything... this year doesn't count. Everything got pushed back. No conventions. Sports has been fucked up. No movies.
Your community will be there when it's okay to return. And I wish there was a good online option. I wish Nintendo could let you do it, but it's one of those slippery slope things.
Slippy slopes.
Slippy slopes. As a large, nameless, faceless corporation, and I think that's another thing with Nintendo is they're good at putting people out there that seem nice.
Sure.
Reggie. You know, Doug Bowser, they have a friendly exterior, but at the end of the day, they are still a cold corporation that is going to only do things that protect their business.
And they answer to Japan at the end of the day, too.
Right.
So if you think Nintendo of America is cold in Japan, it's a blizzard.
So
it took them so long to come around. I'm not saying it's good for them, I'm not patting them on the back, but it took them so long to come around to, oh, let people stream and make YouTube videos of your games and not try to get a chunk of that. You know what I mean? Like, it took them a while to come around to those sort of things.
Yeah.
That they're always behind the curve. So, again, and plus the added bonus is that, well, not bonus, but in the situation, Nintendo's like, I mean, yeah, they're not making money off of Smash Melee at all. So, like, they're cool with, like, you run your tournaments, but, you know, it's that bridge too far for them when you're putting in hacking their software. It's also technically software piracy on top of that. And it's a public event that you're going to be doing and everyone's going to be watching. It's like, all right. They wanted you to cancel it themselves, but if not, they didn't. And then you can't pretend to be shocked that Nintendo would shut this down. Nothing in Nintendo's history would have told them that they would have allowed this to happen. Nothing.
Right.
In their history. They're not Sega that lets some of this fan stuff get away with it. And then, for better or for worse, you see where Sega's at. Not because of stuff, but like Sega's in a situation where, you know, maybe they should have been more careful here and there with things, and they weren't. And now Sega is a shell of itself, obviously. And Nintendo is super protective. They've always been overly protective, going back to the NES days, obviously, because they did not want to become Atari, basically. So they always err on the side of caution to protect them. And that's what happens with this stuff. And the whole situation sucks. I feel bad for the tournament and all the Melee players. I really do. But, yeah, everyone, it sucks for everyone, though. That's all I can say. I hate to say, like, well, it sucks for you. It sucks for everyone right now. All right, what are we talking about? Game & Watch, Ian. Can Doom be played on the new Super Mario Game & Watch?
Yes, but don't get super excited. It's a very cut-down version of it. You can even see in the screenshots, you don't get, like, the face. You don't get Doomguy's face.
No!
The numbers are smaller.
Need Doomguy's face. It's blanked out.
It has a screen and buttons, so it was certain that someone was going to try to run Doom on here. And, you know, for what it is, there it is. It's running. So, the Nintendo Game & Watch, I mentioned the Super Mario Brothers one that came out last week. We had mentioned that we had got one and messed with them, and they're nice, and I had wondered if there would be people out there hacking them, putting anything else on there. Of course, I did not expect there to be a lot of memory on there, and there absolutely isn't. There's a very small amount of memory on there. And so far, no one's found an easy way to just kind of, like, drop and load, you know, different game ROMs on there. They said that so far they've seen someone getting a custom Super Mario Brothers game on there, and then this hackdown version of Doom. I think I read somewhere that there's only like 1.1 megabytes of storage space on the thing. So that is very, very small. That's not going to hold much of anything.
You can get the simpler NES games on. Like I said, you can get all the black box games on there if you want. But at that point, you're going to be tight for it. You're not getting the whole library.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if people, you know, how far the hacking on this goes. Games. Well, someone hack an SD card slot in there? What will people do?
It'd be cute, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to be something that is hacked to the point where it is using it as such as common. Like, so many people have hacked the NES Classics and the Super Nintendo sure. Classics to load up with tons of games because there's lots of space on there and people were able to create easy methods to do so. I don't think anyone's ever going to go out of their way to make this something that they could carry a bunch of games around, but someone out there will probably do it just to say, hey, look, I did it. And I'm excited to see that when it happens.
I saw someone in the comments when we covered it said, well, I can't believe this wasn't like 40 games on this. And I'm like, it's Game & Watch. It's game. You get a game. And you get a watch, in theory. It's a Game & Watch. It's a one-game little thing. Well, this one you get three games. So, like, that's part of the whole thing, is that it's one game. And it's one thing per game. Nintendo's, I mean, you get it right. Not that it wouldn't be a cool idea to do it, but then it's not a Game & Watch anymore. It's another product. It'd be a cheap fucking, handheld that you see out there where they load up, 1,000 ROMs and give it to you illegally. Like, it's not a Game & Watch at that point.
Sure.
It's not pure anymore. As pure as a Game & Watch can be.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's arguments to be made for having Mario 1, 2, and 3 on there. But it is what it is. I made fun of the Game Gear Micros for having only 4 games apiece on them. I'll make fun of this for only having 2. I don't think it would have been a big deal to at least represent the NES Marios on there.
Once you get to there, you get to that strange space. Well, these games take, like, 2 to 3 hours to play, potentially. And I don't know if that's something they're thinking about in the spirit of it. Maybe not. But no, they wanted to keep it a single game. I don't have a huge problem with that. I don't picture people wanting to play a 3 hour game on one of these. Maybe. Well, Legend of Zelda could be 3 hours if you take your ganny ass time.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're talking about a Zelda one last week, and that's certainly a much longer
game.
I'm thinking
more Super Mario 3. That's a grind, Super Mario 3. When I replayed that.
Yeah, but this thing, saves and it picks up where true. You leave off.
All right,
well,
fuck you, Pat. Fuck you, Nintendo bootlicker.
It would have hurt to get those on there.
Oh, no, it wouldn't have hurt. I don't know would have sold that many more, but it wouldn't have hurt to have that. No, I think it's cute. Either way, it's a cute product there. Speaking of licking items... So real quick, there was a YouTuber and another person found this notoriously difficult hard to find McDonald's DSi training game and software that required a password to get in from whoever created each store got like one DSi with McDonald's on it, and they got the software, so it was like locked to the password. And so someone found one on Yahoo Auctions for $3,200. This YouTuber did a 50-minute video walking through the whole process of getting it and everything about it, which you can watch if you want. I would recommend more reading about it unless you have 50 minutes to watch. Watch it. But it's been dumped, so that's good. That's great. I'm surprised there has been one that came up before, being that there's reportedly 8,000 of these made. But then again, maybe a lot of them went back to McDonald's, who got rid of them or locked them away here. But the fact that it's out there is good. Yay for game preservation. It's happening every week now, it seems like. It's picked up more and more steam the past few years. So what did you think? Did you see any of the flipping the burgers on the DSi?
Yeah, I thought it's neat. I would like to actually like have it and screw around with it.
Put on your 3DS. Or the 3DS have a flash drive at this point, or just still in the DS? They must have cracked the 3DS by now. They must have.
I honestly don't know. I don't know of a lot of three. I'm sure you can, but I know it wasn't as easy as normal DS. At least I don't think so.
Oh no, it's right. Because they kept firmwaring it out. And
yeah, I would like to mess with that. Just I want to see like the preparation steps for the different foods and whatnot. And that's part of the training program.
Drop the fries into the oil without burning, scalding.
I
want to
compare it to Cooking Mama and see which one's better. See which one's more fun.
And then finally on this intro, Ian, Video Game History Foundation, our pals, our friends,
have emulated Sega VR.
Emulated.
I actually remember Frank telling me about this and then promptly forgetting.
He forgot?
No, I forgot, but this was something that was going on a couple months ago. Yeah. And so basically they have... Nuclear Rush, I think the entire game is the one game for Sega VR that was completed, or essentially completed. And Sega VR, they talk about in the article how it shares, you know, a lot of fundamental similarities and design with today's VR headsets. I'm no wealth of knowledge when it comes to VR, so I'm not going to get into like the technical stuff. But basically, once they got this, they found a way to get it running on modern VR headsets, and you can play the game as it would have been had the Sega VR ever come out. Sega VR was talked about briefly, I think it was the summer of 93. I remember this issue of the magazine clearly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember my buddy bringing it to school and us looking at it.
Oh, look at this!
And then I remember the same kid telling me after Christmas that year that he got the Sega VR. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I was like, sweet, bring in the manual. I want to, like, check it out. And he was like, oh, no, my mom says I can't do that. Sure. And I was like, okay.
One
and
then of those it
was,
kids, huh?
And then it was like a year later that I realized, hey, that never actually came out.
Did his dad work at Sega well?
Right. One I don't know. But I remember that mock-up prototype of the VR helmet. Like, the image is just burned into my brain. I think it looks so cool. So very 90s.
So who owns a working Sega VR? Is there someone that owns one still? So someone has to have it somewhere, or the mock-up one at least.
I have no idea.
Or they had to have completed. Would they have had to have a working one in order to do the game? Probably not. They could have had a mock-up one or
no. They probably just needed the source code. What I'm getting is, I think they needed the source code. The game itself, they saw it and then realized that the technology that was being used.
I'm saying back then.
Oh, yeah.
Would they have had a completed commercial-ready one completed in order to have the game developed to run on it, or they just had a mock-up, say they had some other VR that they could have...
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I don't think there was ever an actual
that's what I mean.
Completed
so, like, this
Sega
press
VR
press image
headset.
One could just literally be like a husk with nothing in it, potentially.
I think it's like a wooden plastic mock-up.
Okay,
I think I read something about that later. I think it's literally just painted wooden plastic.
Okay.
Like a lot of mock-ups would have been.
So they didn't actually create one.
No.
But they had a $200 price tag, MSRP, ready to go, because it looks like they licensed the technology. They weren't creating it from scratch. That would have been miraculous for 93. That would have been wow.
Would have been absolutely insane.
Would this have sold if this had come out? I believe this would have done better than the 32X. This would have been a better idea. I think this would have done well.
Yes.
At the time. If this was done as well as we see this being emulated on the HTC Vive they're using in place, I think it would have done pretty damn well. Because this isn't the shitty Virtual Boy where you fucking just look into something. You're actually moving your head around. For $200, it would have been, I think, a big seller. And now I'm wondering why they didn't. They had too many ideas, Sega, I guess. They're like, oh, we got the CD, we got the VR, we got the 32X. You gotta pick one lane, Sega, and you stick with it.
Right.
Pick one thing. And the Saturns are around the corner there. So anything else to add here? So they had at the summer CES in Chicago there. So interesting. I never knew that. They had it there to show off. They had someone. Okay, that's my question. They had someone snap. They did have a working model.
It was at
the CES there.
Huh. All right, then.
I had to scroll down and see that. And they were playing what looks like, wasn't this game. It was a different game. It almost looks like a, no, it's a similar looking game. There's Radar. And it's things shooting at them. I'm like, I can't tell if it's the same game or not, though.
There was another game that looks similar. It's called, I think it was going to be called Iron something. Iron Hammer. So that might be what you're seeing down there. That's maybe what they were showing.
Okay. So, no, they had a working one. They had a kid is playing it in 93 there. So, yeah. Very interesting. So someone owns that working prototype model. Maybe there's probably a few of them. God, I'm really wondering why Nintendo never came out with it then.
Sega.
Sega. Nintendo's never had VR. They had that 3D headset for the Super Famicom, though, which is basically the cheap 3D glasses, but the better version. Basically the Sega Master System version of the 3D glasses that we didn't come out here. So they had Iron Hammer. They had this game. as well. What was this one called again?
Nuclear Rush.
Nuclear Rush. I wonder if all the games, though, would be just like things shooting at you and you shooting back, because that's the simplest thing.
I think so. I think they're...
like,
yeah.
You're basically doing...
tank. I would imagine they're tank games. They're going to be Battlezone type games.
Or maybe they could have got a racing game in there. If you can look around a little bit, or... that might make you sick, maybe. Maybe? No, they probably could have done a first-person shooter. Potentially.
Maybe.
I'm trying to think. Was there a Genesis first-person shooter? Or was it not quite powerful enough to pull that off?
There are a couple of things that try to do that. I mean,
first person.
Yeah,
but it even couldn't pull off like a Doom quality on Super Nintendo.
No, I
Doom
don't.
Only could do that with the FX chip. That's the reason they can pull that off.
There's a now it
wasn't powerful enough.
It leaves my mind, but there was a good first person shooter on the Sega CD that was European only. I played it because my friend brought it over the one day and we were messing with it and it was good, but I can't remember what it's called. So yes, they probably could have done something like that.
But it would have been tough without
a
more powerful console, probably. Yeah. Maybe that's why they didn't do it. They figured, this isn't going to move the needle past people buying it originally and being like, okay, well, we have like three games for you, but now we got nothing else.
Right.
Nothing else to go. All right. Well, that's it for this intro.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Lots of stuff we cover. Lots of fun. That was like 45 minutes of goodness. All right, Ian.
Yes.
We just passed the 30th anniversary of a historic game. One of the most important games ever. One of them. It was November 21st, 1990. Super Mario World came out on the Super Famicom.
That's right.
In Japan. Originally Super Mario Brothers 4.
Was it originally Super Mario
Brothers?
Yeah,
you can see some of those title screens, the early title
screens. Oh, yeah.
Before. So we're covering this because we're not covering the 30th anniversary of the Super Famicom because we didn't grow up with the Super Famicom, and we're not going to do, we're going to do it next year for the Super Nintendo 30th anniversary. But we figure Super Mario World is such an important game for a lot of reasons. Groundbreaking 16-bit game in terms of the look, style, feel. It basically reestablished, 16-bit. Platformers, it set the new bar, so to speak,
right,
in terms of not just the quality of the game but the breadth of it. I was trying to think of another game of that period that wasn't a Mario game that would rival Super Mario World in terms of not just the quality of the game but the breadth and the world building that Super Mario World accomplished, and I couldn't off the top of my head come up with a simple one that sort of got into the ballpark of that. Obviously, this was going to be the killer app for the Super Nintendo, and it basically was when it came out. There wasn't something... I mean, you had Sonic the Hedgehog, yes, but that was not in the realm of Super Mario World in terms of, well, this is the one game that you need to have on the console, I think, to that same extent. Obviously, Sonic sold well. Not going to deny that. But that's not the complexity of this game. It absolutely is not in terms of what this game had going on in terms of platform mechanics, power-ups, the variety of worlds in this game, the switch block mechanics, the huge sprites on some of the villains and how they were quirky as well. Yoshi being added to the game where you hop on the character and ride him around and having different powers. There's a lot to unpack in Super Mario World.
Lots and lots of secrets. The Star
lots of
World.
Secrets. Star World. Completing stages in different ways to unlock different pathways for warps. I mean, to a lot of people, well, maybe to my experience, this is obviously the peak of the 2D Mario game. How could you do much better than this?
The argument always seems to come down between 3 and World. I err on the side of 3. I just really, really like 3. But World is fantastic. World, I never... So I had the Genesis growing up, and my friend Kevin had the Super Nintendo growing up. And in all honesty, I was never particularly jealous of the Super Nintendo except for Super Mario World. The only game that he ever had that made me want to go out and get a Super Nintendo was Super Mario World. From the day he bought that Super Nintendo for Christmas until, I don't know, probably when I graduated high school and stopped talking to him, I would constantly fire up that Super Nintendo and play Super Mario World. I loved it. And that's why I think I like 3 better. If I had grown up with 3 and World, I think I would err on the side of 3. But World always had that little bit of mystique to me because I didn't own it. I never owned it growing up, and it wasn't until much, much later in life that I actually went through it and uncovered all of its secrets and discovered everything that it had to, you know,
get the 96 star.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a hell of an experience. I mean, it's a great game. It's one of the few times where I actually do really like the Super Nintendo sound chip. I think the Super Nintendo sound chip is great for many RPGs, but the sound effects and just the background music in
the
Super
Caribbean
Mario
drum
World,
sounds and things like that
stuck in my head.
It's fantastic.
Yep, love it.
The ragtime piano music. Boop, boop, boop. Yep. Like, you can't do that stuff on the Genesis. You just can't. You can't get close to it. And I remember getting it. I got it for Christmas that year. So I didn't get it in August 91. I got it in December of that. I went through the manual and I was like, looking at the mechanics for that, there's a whole, like, you know, 2-page whatever spread on the cape mechanics, because you can do multiple things. You can fly, you can spin with the cape, you can do the spin attack, you can land softly on your belly and knock out enemies, you can do the earthquake attack when you go straight down, like dive bomb and come back up. It's like, it was almost intimidating looking at the manual at the time. It's like, sure. Oh, and I'm just throwing fireballs. Because I had played 3 before, obviously. It was, oh, you get the frog suit, which is cool. Hammer Brothers suit, and you throw in fireballs. It changed how you can play a platformer, getting the cape. Because now you can design the stages where you can go up and do things up there or down, depending upon what power-up you get. And that, to me, was a game changer, because up to that point in a lot of these games, there wasn't a lot of power-ups that really could change how you can navigate the stages to that extent before this game. And so that to me sort of was an important point that this game sort of unlocked for other video games probably going forward. I don't remember another game that quite did it like this. Hell, you want to skip a stage? You can skip a stage, basically, and fly over it if you had gotten that power-up. Or like the somewhere, oh, remember, you figure out one of the hardest ones in the game, alternate levels, where you have to fly underneath the stage and come back up to get that special, these are advanced play mechanics via the power-up in order to unlock certain things. And there's a bunch of others. Well, one of the ghost houses where you have to fly up with the cape and with a key or whatever to do it. So there's some cool things that the cape itself unlocked in the game.
The ghost houses themselves, I think, do warrant special mention as...
Oh, ghost houses are fantastic.
There's lots of neat ways to navigate the levels in Mario 3 with the leaf and stuff like that. You can get the P-Wing and fly over the levels. There are some under-the-level secrets in Mario 3 as well. But the mystery houses, levels that entirely revolve around using the same mechanics that are used to hide secrets, but now you have to do it to get out of... to just beat the level. I think it's neat because it teaches you out in the open how the game is going to hide stuff from you the rest of the game. So you start looking at all the other levels differently. You're like, well, maybe if I do try that, it's going to lead me to something neat. And sure enough, you can find secrets.
Yeah, greater variety of villains, obviously. You got the football guy. You got the, not just the small moles, you got the giant moles. You got the gigantic bullet bills. I don't know if they're called something different. The gigantic ones.
Oh, Bubba Bills
or something. But,
Bullet Bubba.
You have obviously
Large James.
The Super Koopas are adorable when their little capes flying.
Yeah, they're cute.
And like I said, it created a much larger world than even Super Mario 3. And the other reason I like it, on a narrative standpoint, it's a direct sequel to Super Mario 3. It's one of those rare occurrences where it's a direct sequel of a Mario game, where it literally comes right afterwards. They're on vacation, just hanging out after Super Mario 3, hey, we just saved the princess. And oh, she's getting kidnapped again, but they're relaxing. And what is it, Dinosaur Land, wherever they're hanging out. And you know, it's just a cute thing.
Bonsai Bill.
It's called a Bonsai Bill. Okay. The Mode 7 stuff is great. The first time you saw the commercial and you saw Mario climbing the fence, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's like 3D.
And then you can flip it around the fence.
And yeah. Punch them off.
And sprites overlaying each other with it. Yeah, it's great.
That's like, wow. That's we're doing something different. The comedy in the game is on point with not just the characters. You destroy each castle in a different way, which is always humorous. You know, try to blow it up and it doesn't blow up. Or you try to kick it over, or you wipe it out with like what was it, like a mop or eraser or whatever. One of them. There was just an ingenious amount of touches in Super Mario World, where it's like, nah, they could have just maybe kind of phoned it in and just did a Super Mario 3 sequel, but upgraded the graphics. Like, no, this was to me a step above that, and that's why I always prefer this to Super Mario 3. And then people love Yoshi. Who doesn't love Yoshi? You know,
trying to find a. No, I'm just looking up Bullet Bill fun facts.
Bullet Bill fun facts? Yeah. Don't look up Meredith Baxter Birney. You know, we're talking about Super Mario World.
I never had it for Meredith Baxter Birney. Fun facts.
So anything else to add to Super Mario World? I mean, probably could talk more about it. We covered the audio, covered the visuals on it. Being able to hold a power-up. Obviously, for the first time was fantastic, and having it drop in, you know, from above, so that was good. So you can swap out,
yeah,
and do like a whole swap trick. If you know, drop one, get another one, and get the other one to hold. Like, yeah, lots of the one thing I'd say that I missed from Super Mario 3, I missed like the little toad houses and the things like that. Not that it needed, but that was missed.
There were things that were taken away from the game that did not make sense to me. And I think that's why, while it doesn't make one necessarily better or worse, they're different enough for me to think that both 3 and World hold up on their own merits.
Yeah, because it's so easy to get power-ups and extra lives. When I played through it, I played through it... when was the last time I played through it? When I was doing the Super Nintendo book, I reviewed All-Stars. I played through Super Mario World entirely and all the All-Star games. It's so easy to get extra lives if you're a decent player. I had like 25 lives, like after like the second world or third world. So maybe that's one of the reasons why they got rid of that stuff, because it's not difficult at all to get more lives or to get things like that, which makes sense. Because sure. Remember, and you know, you're rushing through these stages. You're getting the whatever dragon coin count and things like that, and so you get to 100 pretty damn quickly. At the end of each stage, on you know the bar that goes up and down and things like that. So yeah, it's been re-released a billion times. We know that. You had the special Super Mario All Stars Plus Mario World Pack-In Edition that came out in the later ages of the Super Nintendo, a few years in, more middle age there, and it's been remade. Was it Game Boy Advance? And then it's been out every system since, their Virtual Console. And yeah, it's one of those games that's going to go down in history. I don't know what Game of the Year awards it won, but it probably was up there. I'm trying to look. Okay, reception. Yeah, it was getting 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. 34 out of 40 from Famitsu. That's a weird scale, but okay.
It's 4 reviewers out of 10.
4 reviewers?
4 reviewers do 10 out of 10.
Oh, 10 out of 10. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting system.
That's how they've always done it. Yeah.
5 out of 5 from US Gamer. Kotaku, 10 out of 10. Super Play, 94%. GameSpot, 8.5 on the Wii. Come on, GameSpot. It's a little low. IGN, 9.3 on the Game Boy Advance, but then 8.5 out of 10 on the Wii. What, I don't understand how you grade it lower. It's the same game. EGM, 9 out of 10 at the time, probably back then. So there you have it there. It would have been a game of the year, at least on a console, if they had those video game awards back then. So here's to you, Super Mario World. We'll see you in 30 years on the podcast when we're getting Social Security. All right, Ian, we talked about Flash games, and animation being in potential peril because Adobe Flash support is being dropped at the end of this year.
Yes. So Adobe Flash, or Flash, which was also Macromedia at one point, was it's an early... animation platform, platform where you can make interactive animations, games, things like that, in browser apps, and post them online. And it was a wildly popular format to do so in, and it was the barrier to entry was very low. So people jumped on it and started, you know, all sorts of early artists, animators kind of cut their teeth on Flash.
Because you can get software. You can download it. Macromedia had their own software. I remember having a copy of it. I'm sure there's other cheaper software out there. You can just basically start diving in and doing your own coding. And it was more rudimentary than coding something from scratch, obviously.
Right. And Flash was extremely lightweight. You could get programs up there under a megabyte. If you needed to. It wasn't, super difficult to keep things lightweight and low for... where's my words going? The internet overhead. So Flash had its problems. Without getting too much into it, because I'm not the smartest on it, Flash, as it was updated and became more and more popular, people started to notice security issues with Flash. And Apple also famously decided that they weren't going to allow Flash use on the iPhone, which immediately kind of killed it everywhere. As the iPhone became more and more popular, people wanted to have those sorts of interactive experiences on the browser that they were using on their phone. And web, or like mobile...
Peanut butter jelly time! Peanut
sorry, I played it.
Time. Jesus peanut H. Christ. that threw me off. No, really, that screwed me.
Apple decided.
Apple, decided that they weren't going to use it on their browsers. And basically, support for it just fell off. People started to look for new things to do, new things to use to create those experiences, so that they could get them onto mobile phones. HTML5 became the big replacement.
Yeah, for basically everything.
Yes. It had all that stuff built in, the native ability to do the animations and things like mm-hmm. that. So they announced that they would be discontinuing Flash in 2017 and that it would end December of 2020, which is next month. Next month. So what does this mean? It means that hosting for basically... web browsers will no longer support Flash plugins. So all the websites that use them, you will not be able to watch those. You can download Flash animations. I'm not sure if everyone knows that. You can go and find a Flash animation that you like on a website, right-click it, and for the most part, you can save that animation to your hard drive. And you can download a Flash player for your computer and watch it that way, but the whole interactive experience of, finding them and experiencing them on a website that catalogs them is going to, for the most part...
Like Newsgrounds. Like
Newgrounds, et cetera. Yeah. Those places are going to be kaput.
Which is a shame. I'm sure they moved on by now to other stuff.
Sure, but that aspect of them is going to be gone. So, the Internet Archive, constant good guys, have...
Constant
good guys. I mean, they are. I have basically created a portal for Flash where people can start uploading Flash files, their old Flash files, to be archived and saved, and just like Internet Archive has been doing, allows many, many things to be emulated and run in browser, that's what's going to happen here. The emulator, I believe, is called Ruffle, and you'll be able to use the Flash programs on the Internet Archive website just like you can with, say, Apple II programs or anything else that they've got emulated.
Yeah, it's basically running through the site, but it's not running in the browser, so they get around it, I guess.
Right, exactly. It's running on the site. It'll look just like it did, but it's emulating it. It's not using the plugin that you have.
So there's a whole splash page for it, there's a whole portal for it, a software library, Flash, for both. It's both for collections, games, and movies on here. It tells you about it. Adobe Flash Animation has enjoyed mainstream popularity since the mid-2000s with many Adobe Flash animated television series, television commercials, and award-winning, et cetera, et cetera. So there, not just tells you the little history of it. There's collections set up. You can search by year that these were released as well. And you can search by probably eventually even more different sub, like here's like a, oh, you, if you want to see the PBS Kids did, there's 26 of them on the site. You click on PBS Kids. You can say, oh, here's what PBS Kids created. There's 26 of them. Cyber Chase, Jigsaw Puzzle, Cyber Chase Vortex. A lot of organizations used Flash games. A lot. I talked about like talk about the Watchmen movie. There was a Flash game created for the Watchmen movie in 2008. It was the way to get stuff done.
Well, and you talk about other stuff. I mean, stuff that was, you know, culturally relevant. I mean, Homestar Runner.
Yes.
Whether you love it or not, and I love it. I somehow
which is
still
the,
think
which
it's
is the
hilarious.
Picture they use.
It's a picture they use. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the poster runner for for just how big Flash got and how useful it was and how effective it was in the right hands.
Remember, this is before YouTube blew up too, so this is a way you saw a lot of cool little, you want to say, meme stuff for viral. So this is how you ingested online shows sometimes, or little animations. There was no YouTube. Started in 2005, but didn't really blow up for a few years.
Right.
So this is the way to do it. So what's interesting is like I played the peanut butter jelly time animation from, and so it, when you click on it, it tells you the date it came out. Then it gives you a little history on it as well.
Nice.
It says peanut butter jelly time is a Flash animation that first emerged in the early part of this century and quickly became an internet phenomenon. This animation is based on a song of the same name recorded by DJ Chipman of the Buckwheat Boys. The best-known version of the animation, which can be seen above, shows a highly pixelated dancing banana moving back and forth to the song's chorus. So you get it's like a little history curation as well of what you're watching. So it's not just going to be a dumping ground. There's a little bit written about it, and then you can download the Flash file. You can download a screenshot of it there, item tile. So it's really it's fantastic that you can do this. Yeah, the XML file for it. So I'm going to go back. Once this really fills up, and this might take, I don't know how long it's going to take to fill this up, too. I mean, how many is going to be at the end of the day? Probably tens of thousands of these things? I mean, how many think is this going to fill up?
They've been doing it for 5 days, and I think there's already a few thousand up there. I mean, it's...
Well, this result says 868 right now. Maybe they have to write up some of these.
Maybe. Oh. But yeah, that's just going to grow.
Because it's only been around since October 27th. It was created.
Okay.
Jason Scott looks like created the archive here. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner. But at least there's now a place where everyone can go for their one-stop shop, hopefully, and they get them all on here for the most part. And I wouldn't think any of these would be complaining about copyright, because how the hell are you going to re-release, or where are you going to re-release some of these little animation libraries or some of these Flash games? You're not going to re-release cheap little Flash games. So like, hopefully the copyright holders don't give a shit about it, or don't cause a stink. I don't see why they would, because for the most part, a lot of these things were never going to be looked at by a lot of people ever again. And that, may they breathe new life into it, you know, on this Internet Archive Flash library. Anything else to add?
No.
All right, Ian.
Yes.
Heritage Auctions. We love the Heritage Auctions. They're the ones that auction off sealed and graded, not just high-end, video game stuff. So the auction of the month happened. They do about one main one a month. And this was going to be significant in our eyes even beforehand, because this was going to be the first Nintendo World Championship cart was going to be auctioned off. For the first time since, I believe, was March of 2019. So really, that's when this was starting to marinate, this new scene of collectors with way too much money and probably not enough knowledge to get in and spend a lot of money on graded video games. So that was one we were going to watch out for. That wasn't close to being the highest amount. Shocking to me, which we'll get into. But it went for a respectable amount on Heritage Auctions. But what the winner was, Ian, the record-breaking, all-time highest recorded video game sale for a single video game is now a graded, sealed, 9.2 graded Super Mario Brothers 3 for $156,000.
don't really have much to say, to be honest. I just don't know what to say anymore about it.
According to this article on PC Mag, this copy was unopened in someone's closet, so they probably got it, you know. They got it 30 years ago, and we're like, yeah, that's cool. Never got around to playing it. Who doesn't play Super Mario Bros. 3 when they get it? That's what I want to ask.
The only situation I can think of here is it's like it was a Christmas where a kid said, I want Super Mario Bros. 3, and he got two of them. You know, that's all
you
I can brat. Think of.
I never got Super Mario Bros. 3, and I won. I never got two. But, okay. So that was the big one that came out. So let's talk about that one first. In this article in PC Mag, they said, why are people paying a fortune for an old video game? We don't know. But Super Mario Bros. 3 is often considered one of the greatest NES titles of all time. This is a quote. It's no surprise that another Mario game which so many of us grew up with would set the new bar. Valerie McLeckley, Heritage Auctions Director of Video Games, said in a statement. McLeckley added that the Super Mario Bros. 3 copy was found in someone's closet, never opened. Often in the case of sealed games, someone just bought them and forgot about them, she said in an email. That was the case here. Oh, so they forgot they bought the game. There it is. They saw this insane stuff happening. Hey, you know, I'm going to get it graded for whatever, $100 or whatever it costs, and then I'm going to make a huge amount of profit on this. A huge amount. The last one looks like the last, let's see, there was one in July, went for merely $38,400. So this one I'm going to say about Super Mario Bros. 3.
It should also be worth noting that this is the first run of it where the...
The bros is on the left.
It's the left bros.
It's the left bros. So, which isn't a ton of them, but there's a decent amount. That's the thing to remember. It's not like they just cut off the presses because, oh no, it's the left bros. No, they let the first print run go, and then they said, okay, we're gonna switch it around. It wasn't an important enough distinction that, you know, stop the presses and we're gonna put the bros in the right. So it's the first print run of this game. I think I said to you last year. Like I looked on my shelf of the hell of it, and I have my cart is the left bros one. Like it just is.
Sure.
Just randomly is.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's not like you know, when you see them in the store, it's not like they're rare to come in.
I don't see them very often, but at any given time, well, I don't have like many Super Mario 3 right now, but let's just say this year. Last year, I went and looked during the summer when we had a bunch of copies still sitting around, and there was like, I don't know, there was like 5 or 6 left bros out of like 30 something.
So doing the pat math, what is that? That's 20%, we'll just say.
Yeah, I guess.
I was going to say maybe at if you want to estimate the number of runs, maybe at, there's like 10 or 15% of Super Mario 3s with this distinction. But they, like I said, they're not totally rare. You can't find them. If you had 5 or 6 of them at one time, and that was you randomly got them in, that's our unscientific way. So it was like 5 out of 30 or so, something like that. 6 out of 30. So
yeah, and I mean, since then I've seen less of them around
because now people are like, "Whoa, I'm gonna get that first print run of it." So what Heritage Auctions did along with WADA is that they put out these first print distinctions to inform people that never had collected a video game in their life. Wow, this is important because you told me it's important. Now to look for these things.
Sure,
that's what's happening here. So, the fact of the matter is that obviously Super Mario Bros. 3 is one of the most common video games ever made. They sold a ton of these things, left or right bros. So you're getting to the distinction of, well, we're getting the first print run, and that's why we're spending a lot of money on this, and that it's a high grade, we're doing that. But what Ian brought up about last time we spoke about this, what was it, Chasing the Flag, when it came to like first print runs of books? This is not the first existence of Super Mario Bros. 3,
yeah.
This game. It's not. If you want to do that, you go get the Super Famicom. Excuse me, the Famicom version of Super Mario Bros. 3, which came out over a year before this? Or about a year?
I think it was at least... I think there was a pretty long wait between them.
So yeah, but you have a different market entirely that's spun up here. An incredibly speculative market. I don't think anyone at this point can deny that this is a totally speculative purchase.
Oh, it is.
An incredibly risky purchase as well on top of that. There's no guarantee, of course, like anything like this, that this means that the next one that comes up in this condition will go for more. It can go for a lot less. If you look at stuff like we talk about, like the, you know, at this point I were to check the prices, but the Spider-Man 2600, the value keeps coming down the more come out. So there's no guarantee that the more come out, it doesn't usually go up,
right?
It usually doesn't there. So that was the first one that I didn't even realize, because I was paying attention to the Nintendo World Championships cart. So Nintendo World Championships cart went for a modest amount in comparison, a deal in comparison. It went for, what was the exact amount here? Why is it not coming up now? Because Heritage Auction site always hates me, and it always rearranges everything, and then you have to, oh, then you got to sign in to see the price here. So it went for, what was it, 50-ish. Somewhere in the 50,000 range, and I cannot believe it's not coming up now. It's not easily searchable. So I was a little shocked just because privately we know that a great Nintendo World Championships had reached six figures in a private sale, and that there was movement, and it might have been more than one that we knew about. So that's why I was shocked that it did not hit six figures, even though it was only a 5.0 grade and not a higher grade, because hell, most of the Nintendo World Championships carts are going to be graded around a 5, or going to be around average.
Right.
Mine, knock on wood, is better than average, but I've seen ones that, you know, they're more often than not, they're not going to be a high grade for a Nintendo World Championship. There's not. Due to the nature of how they were created, how they were abused, basically, mm-hmm. and the cheap glue they use that almost always seeps through. Yeah. Usually it's heavy. Mine is a little bit minor. Usually it's more the moderate side of that. So someone got a deal to me there, because a Nintendo World Championships cart, we know that they only made a maximum of 350 of them about, and that we know that the ones that are known to exist are probably around 70 to 80 of them. Went for $52,800. It went for the 5.0 gray cart. So that to me is the better, if you want to call it, investment, because we know that that's actually a rare game. Super Mario Bros. 3 is not a rare game, Left Brothers or not. It's not a rare game. If you want to try to splice hairs and say, well, that sealed one is rarer or harder to find, yes, I would still probably bet that there is more sealed Super Mario Bros. 3 Left Bros. Than great Nintendo World Championship cards out there. I'll make that bet right now that there's more sealed Super Mario Bros. 3 even on the first print. They did not make a small amount of them. They just did not. There could be a shipping case out there. I'm not saying there is. Nintendo of America could still have ones they gave to employees that are sealed. I mean, it was a huge release. That's why when I say, when it comes to these sealed games, you don't know how many are still sealed out there. You know they made millions of them. You don't know how many are sealed. So, what are you thinking? Was that a more reasonable price, or a deal versus the Super Mario 3?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I kind of thought that would hit six figures, no problem, based on what we had previously heard.
I wonder if these collectors that, again, come from comics, maybe they come from Magic the Gathering or Pokemon cards, they saw that 5.0 and said, oh, that's only a 5.0. When they realize that, they're not going to have a lot of opportunities to buy these in general.
Well, and like we've said before, it's the collectors from other markets that are the ones that are currently in here looking at something like a Mario 3 and trying to find the most pristine example because it's popular. They're not looking for the actual rarities necessarily.
Sure.
They're trying to apply, you know, the knowledge that they have from comics, first appearances, this, that, the next thing, first runs. And we'll see what'll happen there, but it's I definitely think that's the reasoning behind why some of these actually rare games are not going for as much as we would expect.
All right, I'm going to run through the list. I sorted by most recent sales on the View Pass sales price. That's how I'm doing it. If you want to follow along, you got to log in to see the actual price, because Heritage Auctions hates me when I do the podcast. So, not a 9.8, Ian, but a 9.6 sealed Spider-Man in 2600. $750. So that's plummeted in price.
We're right on that.
We're going to get back to what it should be priced at, which is like $100 to $200 again pretty damn soon. Yes, it's not a 9.1, but it's a 9.6. And, well, geez, at that point, it's not a huge amount of difference. My sealed GoGo 13 only went for $276. That makes me sad. That actually makes Pat sad to see that there. Not a lot of... Looks like a lot of the third-party NES games have settled down. It's not crazy. It looks like you want to get a Robin Hood $372. You want to get a Sky Shark $240. So like, it looks like maybe the fervor's died down a little bit for the random third party stuff. Shadowgate $456. It's like, okay, you know, Let's see. There's some Game Boy stuff that went sealed, which is, you don't see that as often here. Let's see. What was any big ones? Not a Duke Nukem sealed Game Boy went for $660 for that's Game Boy Color. That's kind of surprising.
That's a hard to find game.
Okay, so that's why that went for
me. No, it's not a super common game, and I mean, you know, anything with a box Game Boy wise is hard to find.
Okay, that makes sense. There. Oh, I just hit my sealed thing twice, but I didn't hear it, so I don't know why I didn't hear it. Oh, so because my desktop audio is off.
Darn.
No, it's not operating. Damn it. Okay, so let's see some Genesis stuff. Not too impressive. Okay. Oh, Double Dragon Advance sealed went for $1,200. Sealed. That's not a super old game. I was kind of surprised to see it go for that much. I don't know much about it. That's hard to find, though. Double Dragon. That's not my wheelhouse.
It's not super easy to come by. And again, I'm not saying that these prices make sense to me, but they seem about right, I guess.
Well, only it looks like one sealed Sega CD game, Adventures of Batman and Robin, went for $1,800. Once you get the sealed Sega CD stuff, that's going to get a little iffier in terms of predicting where the hell that even goes. Long box PlayStation games, Ian. That's the stuff I like. Not really going for much. People are not buying into the long box PlayStation stuff, unfortunately. They're going for $100, $200, mostly under $100. People are not into that. Geom Cube went for $240. Jumping Fish went for $264.
That sounds about right. Some of those long box games are, you know, harder to come by, and people want them. They want to collect all the long box stuff, but I wouldn't expect it to go, you know, much higher than that.
It just looks like people aren't buying into that, though, as a thing right now yet. Twisted Metal only went for $144. That's a famous game series. You think that would go for a little bit more, but I guess not. A sealed San Andreas for PS2 went for $780. Have to imagine there's a decent amount of those out there, but it's like people are climbing in on theirs. All right, we're going to skip the Atari stuff because who cares, and it's silly, and how much can we talk about a Pac-Man seal going for $1,100 and people literally, or for the most part, just throwing their money in the toilet and flushing it, buying that stuff. A factory case pack sealed in six Kixes for the 5200 went for $480. You buy, get the cardboard box and open it up. And another one, an open Beauty and the Beast in television case went for $960. Yes, just piss on your dollars right there. All right, here's the NES stuff. Here we go. Here's some more NES stuff we have here. Venture Island sealed, $1,000. A sealed Bible Adventures, $264. I'm just going to highlight some of them right here. There was a lot that went off here. A not sealed, Ian. Repeat, not sealed. Contra, complete in box, $1,800. The one I have probably sitting up there. A Reve, it says. Reve early production. Are you kidding me? For Contra? That's not sealed.
Weird.
It's complete in box. A complete in box Darkwing Duck. Not sealed. $1,500. A game that probably, what, last year you could have bought for, what, $150 probably, maybe, complete in box for Darkwing Duck? $200, yeah. Maybe?
Two, I'd say.
Something like $200. Well, you could have bought Contra for $60, you know, a few years ago. That's insane. Now we're seeing the insanity of the seal stuff, again, bleed over in the complete in box stuff. There's a ton of complete in box Contras. I don't care it's a 9.2. There's a ton of box Contras out there. A ton. I'm looking at my stuff now. It's like, wow, I'd be stupid not to try to sell some of these, even complete in box stuff at this point. The Dragon Warrior Nintendo Power copy sealed from the Indiana Collection went for $1,400. That's interesting. There's a couple of Famicom Station games that went for $550 that someone decided to slab. Why would you slab those for? Why would you slab a Famicom Station cart? That's so weird. Let's see. What any other highlights you see here? Ghostbusters 2, 9.8, went for $3,000. That fantastic game that's heralded in video game history went for $3,000.
So
bad. Are you kidding me?
That game is awful.
Someone pulled it from a factory case, probably got that much.
All right.
What's that?
All right.
Your map, you went for $700 for a sealed one. Got some respect. All right, here you go. probably the same Mike Tyson's punch that I have there, complete in box. 8.0 went for $1,500 for a complete in box Mike Tyson's punch out, not sealed. We're starting to get to the looniness. A five screw punch out cart went for $1,300. Now that's interesting because that's legitimately rare and hard to find that. And the fact that they decided we're going to get in the five screw weird territory, and there's some weird three screw stuff that was five screw, like Gyromite, like I have the Gyromite three screw in the non hanged hand box. But it'd be interesting to see if that develops at all for some of those weird five screw versus three screw game variants right there. If you want a RoboCop 2 sealed, $3,600. RoboCop 3 sealed, $2,100. A complete in box Left Bros. Super Mario Brothers not sealed went for $1,200. I'm sure everyone's now scrambling to look at their Super Mario Brothers boxes and seeing what the hell they are because of that. And there's more silliness as you go down the line here. Prototype for Ultimate Basketball went for $576. That's actually, you know, probably what a third party prototype should go for. Probably a little bit more. The prototype stuff never really took off a lot, looks like, on this for the third party stuff. That weird Super Mario Bros. 3 prototype that wasn't a prototype that went for $33,000. That's probably going to be more the exception when it comes to this stuff. WrestleMania seal, $2,200. And then there's some Super Nintendo stuff as well here. But you get the point. It's gotten worse during COVID because people have money to spend. I thought by now people would come back to reality, and it looks like it's not happening yet. Maybe it's happened with the Atari stuff, and they realize there's a ton of this stuff out here, but the NES stuff looks like it's just been picking up more and more, and even Super Nintendo to some extent. When someone's paying fucking $2,600 for a sealed Donkey Kong Country 3, holy shit. Holy shit. They made millions of those. It's nuts. It's absolutely insane. Ian has nothing to add. He's letting Pat ramble through this.
I there's not much interest here. I just list prices. I mean, talking about the Super Mario 3 is very interesting. Talking about the
there's nothing that you see that pops out that interests you?
No.
Nothing at all?
I after a while, I'm just looking at numbers and wondering why people spend this money on this stuff, but that's all.
Your DuckTales on Game Boy went for $4,000 sealed.
That's insane.
That at least is probably hard to find, though, right?
I mean,
sealed.
Anything sealed complete for Game Boy is going to probably be expensive.
Oh, the other big one we forgot to talk about. I didn't want to talk. The N64 prices are batshit crazy. Just because we know that there's just some of these. There's just so many of these out here. Like a fucking Mario Kart 64 Player's Choice sealed. We know that they made a ton of those. $1,200. There's a ton of those out there that they probably never even opened once they were the Player's Choice. You can't even begin to make sense about it. The Pokemon Red that was sealed went for a lot of money.
I think $84,000. I think.
Yeah, that one we should probably talk about. It went for $84,000. Then $9.8. A++. So that's pulled from probably from a shipping carton.
Yeah,
we know
exactly.
That. So are you shocked about that one, or Pokemon's crazy right now in general? So it's not shocking to see that.
I'm shocked at the price, I guess, because my brain says that should be more common. I mean, it was a very popular game, but no, I'm not surprised to see something Pokemon go for a lot of money. If that's the avenue this is going to go down, then that's what we're going to see. We're going to see all of this very, very popular, all these very popular iconic games go for amounts of money that don't likely make any sense based on the actual availability of the item.
Just because it's popular,
right?
Well, and this Pokemon cards are huge right now, you mm-hmm. know, for the old stuff as well. So yeah, that's the long and the short of it. When it comes down to this stuff, you're going to see potentially records being broken on this stuff for a long while more. And we're about 2 years into this, coming up on 2 years, and it looks like it's getting started for a bunch of this stuff for the marquee titles. Especially for NES, Super, not as much, mainly NES. And it looks like if it's Pokemon, it doesn't matter. Obviously, Pokemon, you know, wasn't on the Super. So the Game Boy, that'll be it. But I don't see a lot of the Game Boy stuff catching on, just because Game Boy still hasn't hit that, I think, that nostalgia sweet spot that the consoles have when it comes to this. So there you have it. So we'll see. I'm still waiting for the who's gonna take the NWC Gold Dive and put that one up for auction. We'll see if that happens next year. I think
we'll see it within the year.
I think within a year we'll see that the first gold went on there.
Yeah,
ain't gonna be mine, but we'll see what that goes for. If that's gonna be gangbusters, or it'll be closer to the Nintendo PlayStation prototype wet fart in terms of I mean, it still made a few a few hundred thousand dollars, but it was not the, you know, it was built up by everyone, that fucking prototype. Everyone built that thing up, and it just did not hit what people thought it was gonna hit. All right. You want to talk about the Capcom Retro Station, this odd little device?
I mean, we can just touch on it real quick. The Retro Station, I saw this come up a couple days ago. Capcom is putting out a new all-in-one unit. It comes out in Japan on December 1st. As we said, called the Retro Station. It's kind of got an interesting look. It's got like a blue base that's kind of glossy. The top of it is matte black. And then it has a monitor that's kind of chunky on top of it to make it look almost like a little CRT.
Yeah, it looks like almost like a 90s, like a little TV monitor.
It's got the Capcom blue and yellow color scheme going on. It's got a little circular Capcom logo on the side of the monitor. One joystick and six buttons. The device itself is, you know, it's kind of cute for what it is. As interesting as I think it looks, I think it also looks kind of cheap. I'd be interested in holding it and seeing what it feels like. The Retro Station is going to come packed with Mega Man, the Power Battles, and Mega Man 2, the Power Fighters. Those are the two arcade games. Mega Man X and Mega Man Soccer. I'm assuming just the Super Nintendo versions of those. Well, what else would it be? Mega Man X on the PC? No. Mega Man and Bass, that's the Japanese console version. And then it's going to have Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition, Super Street Fighter 2, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, and Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo. It's going to have an 8-inch display, and that's it. They're saying that the base price, this is where it starts to really slip away for me, the base price is going to be somewhere around $210, and then you're going to have to ship it.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know who this is for.
And how big is that screen? Like 5 inches?
8 inches, it says.
It's 8?
I just said it, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I missed it.
That's all right. So console, yeah, it has an 8-inch display that's not particularly adjustable.
Oh, it's just stuck there.
Yeah.
You can't, like, tilt it?
I guess not. So, I don't know. Capcom, this to me is, this feels like a weird bootleg product.
It looks like a bootleg product.
It looks like a bootleg product. I don't know, and it's only one player, so I don't know who this is for. Who is dying to play an incomplete selection of Mega Man games with an arcade stick?
And Street Fighter games. I mean,
and Street Fighter games.
It's a non-curated list of games. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they were just like, let's throw some Mega Man on there, and let's throw some Street Fighter on there. So, okay, you could say, well, with the arcade stick, then that's cool, because Mega Man, the Power Battle, and the Power Fighters, those were arcade games, so that makes sense, and it makes sense for Street Fighter, but it doesn't look like there's any way to hook up another controller, and I could be wrong, but it's not saying that here. So, what's the fun in having... In those two Mega Man arcade games are fighting games, too. So, what's the point of loading up this weird tchotchke bullshit with a bunch of fighting games that are always better played against two players?
But then, we're going to give you then Mega Man X and Soccer for some reason?
Right.
Like, why would you... I mean, it's cool, but why would you give me those when you're giving me... Otherwise, all these are arcade games, except for what? Mega Man and Bass. Like, why would you bother to do that?
So, as far as I can tell, on the back, it looks like there is an HDMI out port, but... I don't see a spot for another controller. So, yeah, I'm very confused. If this is, even with the ability to play this with two people, I don't see the appeal.
Unless you like that sort of retro look of that mod. It's like something from, like, you know, the Jetsons, I guess. I don't know.
Jetson shit looks cooler than this.
What are the home arcade cost? What are the big
ugly ass stick? I think that was supposed to be like $150 or $200.
So that would be.
I think it was actually cheaper than what they're saying this is.
And you
now,
got
this
more.
Is coming from Slash Gear, so I don't know if that price is accurate. But it wouldn't surprise me if this is actually that expensive. It's just.
But that was justifiable because you at least got a gigantic two-player joystick setup on that.
Yeah, I mean, it looked
and like
dumb.
More quality, probably stick and buttons on it.
I mean, the Capcom logo stick was stupid, but at least you got the two sticks and you got some games on there that at least made sense that people have wanted. Like Alien vs. Predator was on there.
It made sense. You got Final.
Well,
Fight.
I wouldn't go that far. It makes
you
sense
got
compared.
Arcade yes. games. And a stuff that you couldn't easily find, like Strider Arcade, Alien vs. Predator was a big deal.
Yeah.
Armored War, like, it made sense to me, Ian, at least that, for the most part. It was like, oh, this was like the 90s, for the most, except for like Ghouls and, Ghouls and Ghosts was 90s. This was the 90s Capcom arcade stuff. This collection of games just doesn't make any sense at all.
Let's mix arcade and console stuff.
And fighting games, but then you get Puzzle Fighter as well. We'll just throw you Puzzle Fighter.
Puzzle Fighter?
Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbos on the bottom of the list.
Oh, there it is.
So it's like, some of it makes sense, but then we... Don't give me Puzzle Fighter, then give me a fucking Super Nintendo Mega Man soccer game that no one's clamoring for.
Also, don't give me Puzzle Fighter and, again, not let me have two players, because it's... These games... Like, 90% of the games on this thing are really meant to be enjoyed with a second player.
There's no USB out in the back? What is that?
That looks like an HDMI out. So it looks like a power button on the front, and then on the back, I think it's... I don't know, maybe a brightness button, and it looks like an HDMI out. I can't tell if that's HDMI or like a USB.
The one in the middle, though, it has to be a USB for either power or for a second control. It's so small.
It's very tiny. I can't see what it is.
So did they find these molds somewhere that someone had done? And be like, I can't imagine Capcom saying, we want this to be like a retro throwback.
This is a Coleco Chameleon situation. They had the molds, and they were like, we're halfway there.
Someone went into like a junk shop in Japan. I was like, hey, we got 1,000 of these units here. Let's slab them up with this paint, and we're going to throw these ROMs in here. Like, it's just a bizarre thing. So, all right. Well, I guess if you want, you could check out the Capcom Retro Station, but where do you buy this thing from at this point?
You'd have to import it. I don't know where you'd buy it.
Okay. Have fun with that. All right, Ian, we have a scumbag.
Seller.
Of the
week.
You forgot how it went, because we haven't done one in a while.
This is going on. I forgot that, yes. I thought it was, I forgot we had the scumbag seller.
You forgot. This scumbag seller of the week comes to us from eBay. And it is user Pilate, P-I-L-A-T-E, 713. And they are selling, they're selling 120 vintage classic Nintendo Power issues. Oh, no, wait. They're selling the issues on a DVD that they're burning, which are the PDF files on here.
And I feel like we've done this before because it seems like it's similar PDF files, because you can also get Sega Visions.
Is this a retread? Is this a duel? Is this a second time scumbag seller?
I'm having real hot deja vu. But maybe it's just a different person who is trying to make money doing the same thing. But yes, they're selling you documents that are just widely available on the internet.
Freely available.
They got these from somewhere.
There's gaming there's game magazine websites that have almost all these available, if not all, like almost all the all the ones ever for gaming magazines you can find in newsletters.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Was it Gaming Scans? What's it called?
I have no idea why anyone would purchase this. Instead, I mean, you can go to your computer, fire this up, pay the privilege.
Retromags.com.
Yeah. Pay $13.49 for the privilege of having these all sent to you on a DVD that you can then take out of the package, put into your computer, load onto your computer, and then read. Or you could just go to the fucking website, skip the buying aspect, and read the magazines on your computer. I have no idea who wants to do this.
What's so discouraging, it says that they've sold 63 of them.
Yeah.
So this person's made $600 profit before fees.
Because people don't know how to use Google.
It's insane. How could you search for this and not know? This is what I like someone out there to do. So someone put up 1 cent buy it now is advertising the same exact thing, saying, hey, just go online here and this is where you find this shit. Just do that. Just basically do like an advertisement and fuck with this person or people that are doing this. This is insane to do this. So when you click on other items, like you said, what else is here? You got the Sega Visions Complete Collection for $13 for a burned DVD that costs a quarter.
Ahoy magazine collection.
Of course, they're also selling the RetroPie classics, so they're doing piracy not just on the gaming platforms, but also on covering it on the journalistic side. They're doing that as well.
Yeah, so this appears to be like their big thing. Diehard game fan, Sega Visions, Computel's Gazette magazine collection, Ahoy magazine. Jessica Rabbit Penthouse. Okay, now that's
what?
That's an actual issue.
Okay, now we're getting more into the person's WWF Attitude shirt from 98.
They have a copy of No Mercy for the low, low, very reasonable price of $39.99.
I'm glad you brought that up. What is that actually going for? Is COVID...
probably 15 to 20. It's certainly No Mercy is...
It's gone up because of COVID?
No, well, that one was starting to go up even before COVID because of all the AKI wrestling games, that's considered the ones that were released in the U.S., that's the most refined version of the engine.
Sure.
That was the last one in the series of four because they did NWO vs. the World, Revenge, WrestleMania 2000, and No Mercy. So No Mercy is kind of like the final evolution point.
Evolution? Was Mayhem AKI?
I think it used a similar system, but was not AKI.
Well, I guess the reviewer will tell me that in a certain N64 guidebook. Looks like the buy nows are going for 20 to 30, actually. So that's not totally unreasonable.
20 is what I would have expected.
Okay, so there you go. That's interesting. And then, of course, if you want, you can get your 2-pack Axe body spray Phoenix 4-ounce can. Now, looky here with a voluptuous woman using to advertise the Axe body spray for some reason. So this is the caliber of seller you're seeing here in terms of what they're selling and how they're selling things here. It's interesting. You can get a Dead or Alive Extreme Blue Swimsuit Helena figurine from 2006 as well. So there you go. So once again, people out there, anyone you know that happens to say to you, hey Ian, I want to read some old Nintendo Powers. I got a nostalgia hit here. Tell them go online. And go to retromags.com or go to the Internet Archive. Do not go on eBay and search for a goddamn DVD that you have to wait to arrive. Hopefully you still have a DVD drive in your computer because nowadays a lot of them don't have drives anymore. Load it up, then download it, and then figure things out. At that point, how to deal with that. That's just... I mean, we're talking about stuff that should have stopped in 2004, basically. Putting stuff on DVD backups. 2006, maybe? Stop doing that. Stop it. Just stop it. At this point. All right. Anything else to add here? I mean, this is just ridiculous.
No, it's dumb.
And the Axe body spray is the cherry on top of this scumbag seller of the week.
The Axe body spray packs.
All right. Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go. You arrive. You go.
You go.
You go. You arrive. You go. Wow. Here I am. Look at what they're offering. If in exchange for some ducats, some gold dinero doubloons, crisp lettuce, you can get the...
Kruger hands?
Yeah. You can get the full audio video. Full video. I guess there's audio with the video podcast. You can get the full audio video podcast. You get, I do a writing once a week. This week I wrote about my Thanksgiving preparation. We do a hangout once a month. That was fun this week. And you get to vote in a reader, listener, topic.
A poll. It's a poll. You vote on a poll topic.
A poll topic.
In third place, should musicians convert Game Boys into speaking spells? Only 16%, which means I guess they're okay with that. In second place, at 20%. Besides Super Mario 35, what retro games could make good Battle Royale games? 20%. And in first place, best games to play remotely with family. Ian, you take
it
away.
Not in the same room. So I've actually been thinking about this a lot lately. I think we all have. We're not going out and doing much, but we still want to hang out and play games with our friends. We haven't been able to go and do that at conventions. We haven't been able to go to the arcades. You know, I haven't been able to go and play pinball. That's been driving me nuts. It's like the thing I love to do most with friends is go grab a beer and play.
It's never coming back, pinball, because of this year. It's never coming back.
Never coming back. It's done. So, when it was obvious that this was potentially going to be what was chosen, I started to think, and I've come to two conclusions that I would think are very good. Everyone knows that you can play Call of Duty online with people, you can get into a multiplayer RPG with people, and you can keep in touch that way, and lots of people have. A lot of people have a social life that exists around online games, and they know how to keep in touch with those people and chat over headsets. But a couple things. So one game set that I really like that's a bit more casual and doesn't require as much time investment are the Jackbox games. Jackbox games, for those who don't know what they are games released by the same company that invented You Don't Know Jack, which was a trivia game that was released in the late 90s. And the questions were... they would cover current events, but they were funnier, they were hipper, it was a hip, edgy quiz game. But what they did is they've started bundling a bunch of different games together, like a board game box. And these games are great because most of them support anywhere from 4 to 100 players, and they are easy to stream. And if you're watching a Jackbox game stream, you can play along as a player with only a cell phone. You don't need a system. You don't need a special controller. You just need your phone. And what you do is you find the people who are playing the game and you input the room code. And between the screen and your phone, you see everything you need to know about the game. So drawing prompts, or it'll ask a question and your possible answers are on your phone. And it's a great way to get together and have fun. It's easy to set up. You can do it over Google Chats. You can do it over PlayStation 4. You can do it in a bunch of different ways. And the nice thing is only one person has to handle the technical stuff. If you're the one streaming it, you're the only person who has any sort of complications that could even possibly
arise. One person
has
to have purchased it, too.
Yeah, and only one person has to have purchased it. After that, you simply send out a link to everyone in your family or friends group who's going to be playing with you that night anywhere on the planet, and they click that link, and boom, they're looking at the game screen. And since they're played with a cell phone, you have the same controller that everyone else has.
Before Brent kills me when he hears this, check out Use Your Words, because it's a similar party game available on Steam, and I believe it's on Switch now. You can do the, it's a similar sort of a word game. You
nice.
Can, and it works on the phone as well. You can send out codes. So check out Use Your Words.
And then the other one isn't a video game at all, but I would mention Dungeons & Dragons scales extremely well to the internet. Before COVID hit, Vani and I started a new campaign with a family that shops at her... the comic store that she works at. She had never played, but you know, they're a real cool family, and I like playing, and Vani knew that, and she knew that I wanted to play, so she was interested. So we set up, and we went over there, I think, 4 times early in the year to play in person. And playing D&D in person is great. I mean, there's no real replacement for sitting around the table with everyone, eating snacks, yelling, getting hilarious. But when COVID hit, we were afraid we'd have to stop. Our DM reminded us of and there's other programs, but the one that we use online is called Roll20.net. And it's a central hub where there's basically a screen that everyone can see, a whiteboard.
Roll20.net.
Roll20.net. And so maps and whatnot can be put up there, and it connects people. You can use the in-program voice chat and video chat, or you can use your own. You can use Skype or whatever. But it provides basically a digital tabletop for everyone to gather around and play the game. And it works really well, like without a hiccup.
And how do you load up like your game you're playing?
Yeah, basically you just bring in PDFs and stuff to represent your game maps and stuff like that. And there's, you know, all sorts of various...
You can bring in like peace...
You can move pieces.
Symbols and
yeah,
stuff.
You can bring in peace symbols. So you've got, you know, you get a drawer of tokens that you can use. You get various maps that you can buy or create. You know, everyone can have their little figurine represented on screen. And you can set the control to certain people. So, you know, I'll only be able to move my character on my screen. Only he'll be able to move the monsters on his screen. You know, so it's interesting. You can set it up so that, you know, only the people who... only that player can touch their stuff, basically.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it's easy. And I forget how easy it is to get into D&D. People, I think... yes, people avoid D&D because they think it's nerdy. But I think a lot of people who would really enjoy it avoid it because they think it's very complicated and it's very difficult. And, again, much like what I was talking about, the Jackbox stuff, the beauty of D&D is it's really only complicated for one person. And that's the DM. A couple, you know, 15, 20 minutes with a character sheet, having some things explained to you, getting a rough idea of how a game flows, it's pretty easy. I mean, it's role-playing for a reason. You get in there and you basically just act like the character that you created. And a good DM is going to be able to walk you through your dice rolls and what you need to do to cast your spells and things like that until you get the hang of it. But it all kind of comes second nature. It's all just rolling a die and checking it against numbers and then adding a modifier if you need to. Mm-hmm. And it's a really fun way to... for me to hang out with people and connect with them. I don't do well talking on the phone, just cold picking up, talking on the phone with someone. I hate fucking doing it. Pat knows. I avoid Pat. I avoid everyone on the phone. And video chat hasn't made that any easier for me, because when you're doing something like that, it always seems like there's space to fill. Like, you've got to be talking. You've got to keep things moving. D&D is great because it's just like how I like to hang out with people in real life. There is a central focus and conversation just kind of forms and happens around that. Mm-hmm. So that there's it's more comfortable when there's something that everyone's focusing on and doing. Like, I like to go out to eat with people. I like to go to the bar and play pinball with people. I don't like to just sit there and be like, let's chat. So it's nice. It's given me a way to use video chat to stay in touch with people that feels comfortable, and we're playing a game at the same time.
Why don't you invite Frank to one? He can resurrect his old character.
Yeah.
From the 80s, from the early 80s. He likes D&D.
Yeah, those would be my option, my two choices.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a lot. How about looking on this website from Oprah Magazine, Scrabble Go. It's looks like it's a free app, and looks like you can play with other people.
Fuck Scrabble Go.
Oh, okay. Sorry I brought it up, Ian.
Fuck, Scrabble Go.
What's next, then? There's a Coin Master available in the App Store. How about stuff that, like, I want to play with an older generation? They're not going to play Marvel Strike Force.
So angry about Scrabble Go.
My uncle's not going to be playing Fortnite. Why is that on the Oprah Magazine list? They are not playing Fortnite. Come on. This is the Oprah audience here. What are you doing here? They put Animal Crossing New Horizons on here. My dad is not going to operate a Switch, but thank you for putting it on here. A game called Golf Battle is on here. It's a little mini online mini golf game that you can play. It's on the App Store and Google Play. Huh, up to 6 people can play it. That's cute. Scattergory is on here. Yeah, I'm picturing a lot of... there's a Go Fish sort of game. I'm picturing a lot of old-timey board games and stuff, free app games that hopefully you can add a friend on and play on that, or playing chess with, like, you know, I used to play chess with my father a little bit back before I got to high school. I did that. So I don't have a huge amount of time ahead. I'm more thinking about now my family. And even what would my sister be able to handle? My sister probably would be able to figure out, you know, an app or something like that. My father might be able to. My mom, who knows, at this point? Like, what would you play? Like, if you said, "Hey, Dad, let's play something on Thanksgiving," what would you play with your dad?
With my pops?
Yeah.
Well, with my dad, I would probably actually play No Man's Sky or something like that. My dad has recently also gotten really, really wildly into Star Trek Online.
Oh,
holy shit, he is playing the fuck out of that. But No Man's Sky is one that my dad and I can jump into and go explore a planet for a while. My mom is not particularly into video games, but the Urbacher side of the family, my mom's side of the family, Scrabble is the family game. If we had a coat of arms, there would be Scrabble tiles
somewhere. What's your go-to solution if the online one sucks?
I don't have one anymore.
There's not a Scrabble
alternative? There used to be a Scrabble app for your phone that was fine. It was bare bones. Actually playing with someone you wanted to play was way more of a pain in the ass than it should have been. You needed Facebook integration. But it was Scrabble, and it worked. They ended that app, and they released Scrabble Go, which is made by the same people who make the fucking Yahtzee app on the phone, which I have talked about before, which is easily just one of the biggest trash heaps my eyes has ever
seen. When you say they ended it, was it you couldn't even connect to the server?
You can't
connect.
Yeah, you can't. They ended it. So Scrabble Go, instead of having a clean interface that it's just a game of Scrabble, it's fucking yelling at you from the moment you sign on. Unlock these tiles. Unlock these tiles. Get this. 40 diamonds for $2.99, whatever the fuck that is.
Unlock the letter G? Like, what do you mean? What tiles?
Cosmetic tile upgrades.
Oh, God.
And then my least favorite thing, and this is something that I've seen in a lot of current board games, is you can pay to cheat in your game.
Okay.
You can pay like a certain number of like diamonds or whatever it is, and they'll suggest words for you. And that would be fine if you're just playing against the computer, but you're playing against other people, and there's no way to know if they're using the cheats or not. So you don't know if it's a really close game and you've found a great match, or if you're just playing with someone who keeps hitting, use the best word possible.
That sounds like a nightmare. It'd be like in chess if you're playing someone and they were getting suggested moves and you had no idea.
It sucks. And they did the same thing to Yahtzee, and it's a wildly... And that makes even... That's even fucking stupider.
How does it work with Yahtzee?
You can straight up buy extra rolls instead of using just three rolls. You can You can straight up buy an extra roll.
But that destroys the difference of getting a Yahtzee.
Yes. They're fucking miserable, dude. They are the worst.
Man.
It makes me so
There's
fucking
gotta
mad.
There's got to be a free alternative in a browser somewhere. There
well,
has
the
to
problem
be a,
is this. Scrabble, I love... Scrabble so, browser game. There's Words with Friends, and there are Scrabble games, but they don't use the same...
Same rule set?
They don't use the same bonus layout.
Oh, really? That's how they get around the copyright?
Yes. And, like...
Scrabble Online. Let's see. What is this?
It's fine, but I kind of take Scrabble, like, weirdly seriously.
Hey,
like,
I take chess seriously. It's your thing.
I have a lot of fun with it, so I don't want to play... What I don't want to do is, like, start playing on a board that screws up... In my mind, I know where all the fucking bonus tiles are on Scrabble. When I'm playing on a Scrabble board, I know how I want to build myself out so I can reach those tiles. That's different on the alternate versions.
I got mine because I've been doing it. Playing poker online over Zoom with PokerStars.net, free software. You can buy play chips or you get like a free amount when you sign up and every so often. And you can play tournament games or cash games. You set up a home game. You invite people to them. It's free. The way the site makes money, Ian, is that there's a rake, meaning they take a part of each winnings because you're using play money. But it's the best interface I've seen. That's free, and it's real poker. It's not the awful Clubhouse games, which is not poker on that, which I was not expecting to be real poker. But it was even worse. And no, you go on Zoom and you same thing. You're chatting while you're playing poker, and then Pat may be playing for money, maybe, but you know. It's very entertaining and it's very fun. I'm sure people that play poker online probably use PokerStars. I think it's PokerStars.com for the one that where you actually use money, and .net's the free play version there. So yeah. So this Thanksgiving, everyone out there have a safe one. Social distance between the turkey and the yams and the corn.
The corn
and the mashed potatoes. If you do that instead of the yams. Frank's doing a sweet potato pie this year. Now we're going off topic. That's going to end that topic, I think, right there, because I'm getting hungry.
We're good. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Right Pod. See you podcast.
It's been almost 8 years, Ian.
I get them confused. I opened an episode of Extra Napkins a week ago by saying thank you for tuning into the Completely Unnecessary podcast, and John just let it ride, didn't correct
you
me.
You never ever said that on this podcast before. I don't believe you. I got to hear that. I think this is backdoor advertising for the other podcast. You brought your podcast like seven times.
That's fine. Listen to the other podcast too,
but not in lieu of this one. Don't. You know.
I mean, not instead.
It's a side dish.
Listen to both.
All right, so that's it for the podcast. Again, have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. You know, do Zoom calls or do it. FaceTime is magical with everyone. Everyone's doing the FaceTime and the Zoom this year. Even my sister and brother-in-law, who had fucking COVID, are not going to go over to see my parents because they're afraid of something weird happening. And they had COVID. They're not doing that. They're being smart. They're going to do a size exchange. I guess put the size on the front porch and do it like that. So there you go. I said to my sister, like, my sister's like, well, I got tested for it, but I guess I didn't show up. And I was like, he had it. You were sick while he had it. I mean, you had it. I mean, come on.
Sure.
You know, so they're being safe. That's the whole point there. So have a good one out there. Me and Ian are gonna rifle through some goodies over there. And then we will see you when we're fat and happy next week. Bye.